Well, what do you do when you're in a bad mood? Do you have a piece of chocolate, maybe, or a glass of wine? Psychology professor Douglas Gentile suggests that maybe the best thing you can do for yourself is to wish other people well. He's an award-winning research scientist, educator, and author, and is professor of developmental psychology at Iowa State University, and he joins us now by phone. Welcome, Doug.
Oh, thanks, Annie.
Thank you for being here. Well, first of all, please describe your areas of study for our listeners a little bit.
Well, what I'm most known for studying is the effects of media on children. So video games and television and movies. And so this study was a bit of a departure from what I normally do.
Sure. I'm guessing that perhaps social media and the internet prompted it in some ways?
No, what actually prompted it is I was several years ago co-chairing a panel at the White House on video games and children's health. And my co-chair was Chade-Meng Tan from Google, who is the guy who kind of got mindfulness practices in Fortune 500 companies. And at that conference, he said to me, you know, the best thing you can do to improve your mood and your sense of social connection is, as you're walking around, the people that you see, just think to yourself, I wish for that person to be happy. And within just a few minutes, it'll improve your mood. And scientist me said, I can test that.
Which is the beauty of science, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you can claim anything you want, but I want proof. And so I came back and designed this study to try to test it.
That's terrific. So describe the study for us. How was it designed and conducted?
Sure. So it's an experimental study where college students were randomly assigned to be in one of four conditions. In one condition, it's exactly what you just heard about. We asked them to walk out into the hallway over the building, and the people they see just wish them well, wish for them to be happy. In the second condition, we thought, well, maybe another thing that, you know, keeps us sometimes from feeling happy or feeling is how separate we always feel. We walk around, you know, believing that we're disconnected from others, when in fact nothing could be further from the truth. We're so connected in so many ways, biologically, culturally, motivationally, emotionally. You know? And so we asked them to walk around, and the people they saw, think about how they might be connected to them. For example, they're not just both students here at the university, but maybe last week they went to the same restaurant and got their meal prepared by the same cook who got the food off the truck from a farmer who went to Iowa State 40 years ago, and start seeing this deeper level of interconnection. In the third condition, it was a kind of a straight-up social psychology condition where social psychological theory says one of the ways we maintain our self-esteem and our mood is through a process called downward social comparison. This is where you compare yourself to others who might be worse off than you. So you're having a bad day, but then you see a homeless person and you go, well, at least, you know, I'm not there yet, and you feel better about yourself. And that's supposed to improve our mood. I actually thought it might not help, because at its core, it's a kind of competitive strategy.
Yeah, and it's negative.
Yeah. And then the fourth condition is a true control condition, because walking around might improve your mood. Looking at other people might improve your mood, because we are social creatures. And so in this condition, we just ask them to walk around, look at people, notice how they're dressed, fashions, colors, patterns, you know, just kind of looking at their outsides, but not actually doing anything with that. Mm-hmm. And then we had them come back into the lab, and they filled out a bunch of surveys. And what we found is that if they walked around wishing others well, they were happier. They had lower anxiety. They had more empathy for other people, and they felt more of a sense of social connection than the control condition.
Wow.
If they had done the interconnectedness contemplation, it didn't seem to improve their happiness or anxiety, but it did still improve their sense of social connection and empathy. And if they walked around thinking about how they were better off than others, that had no benefit whatsoever.
Really interesting. So was this a surprise to you, or did you kind of suspect it would turn out this way?
I suspected it would turn out this way, but it's a surprise to theory, because the theory says doing downward social comparison, thinking how you're better off than others, should actually make you feel good about yourself. But But I think what is in the past, it's usually been measured just like, you know, when you do it once rather than when you do it over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe it would help, just doing it one time. Or traditionally also, they put people under a certain sense of threat. And then the downward social comparison can help them overcome that threat.
Oh.
And we didn't threaten them. We didn't tell the students they were all failing and go find other people who are failing worse than you for somewhat obvious ethical reasons.
Sure. Very interesting. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Professor Doug Gentile. He is a psychology professor from Iowa State University, and he is talking with us about a study they recently did on how to improve your mood. So, Doug, was there any difference in the results depending on people's personalities or, anything like that?
Good question. Yeah, we hypothesized that maybe certain types of people would be able to do this task better or get more benefit out of it. For example, maybe people who are naturally more mindful, when we tell them to go out and think about wishing other people well, maybe they'd just be better at that task or get more out of it. And that's not what we found. Yes, the mindful people got a benefit, but so did the people who weren't normally very mindful. It seemed to be equally good for them. We also tested narcissism, and we thought maybe people who are higher on narcissism, they're not used to wishing other people well. They're used to thinking more about themselves, and maybe it would just be harder for them to do, and so they wouldn't get as much benefit. And again, that's not what we found. We found that it worked basically equally well for everyone. And so what a simple intervention. It doesn't cost any money. You can do it wherever you are. If you're in your car, you can just notice the other drivers and say, I wish for that person to be happy.
Yeah, it's beautifully simple. And I would just think it would just improve the general, I know this isn't a scientific term, but the general vibe and the general feeling in your brain and around others.
Yeah, I think what many people experience, and pretty much every world religion says the same kind of thing, that when we spend too much time thinking about ourselves and thinking about what we want and whether we like what we're having or don't like it, it really narrows our focus. It brings, it's harder to feel happy. Mm-hmm. Then actually, we're at our happiest, I think, often when we're just with other people paying attention to them.
Yeah, and when we get out of our own heads.
Yeah, and but it's not like there's really something wrong with being in your head, because in this case, we're using that power. The fact that you can imagine things, the fact that you can, imagine, I want that other person to be happy, even though you don't know them. That seems to have a real benefit. And, of course, I don't actually believe that all of these college students meant it. we asked them to. But, of course, we just told them to, right?
Sure.
And they know they're in an experiment, and they know it's really artificial thing, and yet it still worked. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it sounds pretty powerful. I also feel like the wishing other people's well and is similar to things I've learned about, I think it's Buddhism, about, wishing to end people's suffering. And, there's a whole series of statements and that you do.
So you're talking about what's sometimes called metta, M-E-T-T-A meditation,
yes.
Which is translated from Pali into loving kindness. And often it goes with, may you be healthy, may you be safe, may you be happy, may you live with ease, are four common phrases. And you can do this as a formal meditation where you actually think about particular people, someone that you love, someone that is neutral to you, someone that you have a difficult relationship with, and then all people together. And again, this is using the power of your mind to try to, I guess for lack of a better word, get over yourself.
Right.
That you're trying to open your heart rather than feel so closed off and selfish.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I want to ask you, toward the end of this conversation about how some practical ideas for actually doing this. But first, I'd like to hear you talk a little bit. When I read about the downward social comparison, you know, I couldn't help thinking about Facebook and Instagram and, you know, how people, you know, we all look at those things and go, oh, that person has X or does Y or whatever. I mean, did you think about that? It just doesn't seem like it's a great endorsement for those sorts of things.
Well, I'm thinking about it now because that does seem to be the next logical question. We obviously didn't measure that in this study. But if I can extrapolate what we know from this study and from some other similar ones, that, well, you know, let me take it away from social media for just for a minute. A lot of women like looking at glamour magazines, and I don't know if you ever do this, but the research seems to show that although women say they like it, if you actually measure what they're feeling when they've closed the back cover, they're never happier about themselves. They usually feel much worse. They have more depression, more body dysmorphia, worse mood, more tendencies toward eating disorders. So looking at all these, you know, glamorous shots of, you know, airbrushed, Photoshopped supermodels doesn't make us feel better.
Right.
Even though when we're doing it, we think we're liking it. And that's because, yes, our brains are constantly comparing things around us. Whether or not you want to, if I asked you, for example, to lift a 5-pound weight and estimate how heavy it is, you'd be pretty good. You might guess 4, you might guess 6 pounds, but you'd be about right. But if I first ask you to lift a 20-pound weight, and then lift a 5-pound weight and judge the 5-pound weight, you'd now call the 5-pound weight 3 pounds. I didn't ask you to compare them, but you will. There's kind of no way to stop that part of our brain. It just is naturally doing it because that's one of the ways humans learn. You know, children learn from watching what other people do and then comparing the results they get from what, you know, if they try it.
Yeah.
So it's a really important part of human psychology, but it can have real negative consequences because it can lead to envy and jealousy and, you know, fear of missing out. And so when we're looking at social media, I think it's too easy for those emotions to be a little more dominant, just the same way, you know, when you're looking at the glamour magazine, even though you think you're enjoying the experience, ultimately it doesn't leave you feeling very good. And I think a lot of people are finding the same thing about Facebook. So what would happen if instead of just about looking at it normally, as you looked at each post, you actually wished, oh, I hope this person's happy. And if they're posting something happy, then great, I'm really glad. You know, that's, you know, try to amplify that happiness. If they're posting something sad, wish them well for that. And if they're posting something political, especially if you disagree with it, that might be a really powerful place to try to say, yeah, we, you know, still this person wants the same thing I do. They want to be happy. They don't want to suffer. And
yeah, sounds like there's tons of opportunity for study in that field.
Yeah, I think that'll be our next study, probably, seeing if it works over in social media.
Right. So, Doug, before we let you go, how would you suggest we put your finding that, you know, wishing others well in order to improve our own mood? How do we put that into practice in our everyday lives? Do you have a couple ideas for us?
Sure. Well, I think as with any of these things, it's kind of about starting to try to form a habit. So you might pick a place where it's easy, such as if you do a morning run or a walk or something like that. Just try to add that. You know, as you notice people, get out of your own head, notice them, and, you know, it's just a simple thought. I wish for that person to be happy. That's all you have to say to yourself. You don't actually have to speak to them. I think they'd find it kind of weird if you did. Or if you're driving in your car, or if you're in your office and you're just kind of, you know, taking a break and prairie dogging at your cubicle, you know, notice the other people around and wish them well.
Okay, well, that sounds completely doable and worth a try.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of science. Try it. If it works, keep doing it. If it doesn't, then you don't keep doing it.
Try something else. Well, thank you so much for your time tonight, Professor. We really, really appreciate your ideas and insights.
My pleasure.
Thank you.